On Sunday, Dave and his wife Morley slept in. Monday, too. Dave forgot he'd unplugged the alarm. Didn't wake up until his boy Sam tried to climb into bed with him. It was 8:05. By the time they got downstairs, everything was moving too fast for anyone's good. Sam was pouring his own cereal, getting most of it into the bowl. Morley was peeling a carrot into the sink, too focused to notice Sam's mess. Holding the carrot out like she was doing a cooking demonstration, "Whose celery?" she asked. "Whose carrots?" Why could she never remember this? "Me," said Stephanie, her mouth full of toast. "Me what?" said Morley. "Me carrots or me celery?" It was 8:40. Both kids should have already left for school. "You should eat something," said Dave to his wife as he ducked around Sam on his way to the sink, knowing even as the words left his mouth that this wasn't helpful. What he wanted to say was, "I feel guilty eating when you're running around." What his wife heard was, "It's your fault when we're late." "I need a prescription slip," said Sam as his father tied his shoes. "We're going on a field trip to Humpty Dumpty." "You're going where?" asked Dave, incredulous. "He needs a note," said Morley from the kitchen. "To go to a potato chip factory?" "This is a school trip? You're going to a potato chip factory?" "I need a note or I can't go," said Sam. "Where's the letter from the school?" said Dave. "I want to see this." "I don't know. I think it's in my bag," said Sam. "He lost it," said Morley. "I need a note or I can't go," said Sam. "You're telling us now?" said Dave. "I'll write the note," said Morley, throwing down the two lunch bags, glowering. "You drive." 40 minutes later, late himself, Dave is standing in front of his record store, patting his pockets. In the rush to get the kids to school, he's left the keys to the store at home. It's 10:30 before he opens up. Tuesday. Tuesday, Sam can't find his bicycle lock. He wants to use Stephanie's. Dave lurches into the backyard, trying to get there before they start hitting each other. "Stephanie won't let me use her lock," says the boy. "He lost his lock. That's his fault," says his sister. Later, reaching for some cartons that are piled along the back wall of the garage, looking for an old bicycle lock that he's not even sure exists, Dave stumbles over the lawnmower and whacks his shin on something sharp. The pain crashes up his leg and settles behind his eyes. He moans out loud. The dog looks up at him, her tail wagging. "Get out of here," he snarls. He has the good sense to tuck his tail down and disappear. Why is this garage such a mess, thought Dave. Even as he stands there, he knows with certainty that no matter how much time he spent cleaning or ordering or hanging things on the wall, it would always return to this. His family would always be late in the morning. His garage would always be a mess. If he could only find the lock, he thinks, it wouldn't bother me so much. At noon, Morty Zuckerman phones the store and invites Dave and Morley to dinner on Friday night. The invitation catches Dave off guard. They hardly know the Zuckermans. "We'd love to come," he says. Thinking as he hears himself say it, "Why did I say that?" It was against family rules. He was supposed to check with Morley first. They were supposed to check with each other before they accepted invitations. "I should have checked," he thinks to himself as he hangs up. At supper, Stephanie says she needs $15. "I can't find Elaine's tape. I have to buy her a new one." Maybe, said Dave, "you should use your own money." "I don't want to use my money," said Stephanie. "Why not?" said Dave. "I don't want to waste my money on a tape for Elaine." Lying in bed that night, Dave put his book down and flipped off the lamp on his bedside table and tucked his arms under his head. "What are we doing wrong?" he asked his wife. Morley, who had turned her light off only moments before, didn't answer. She was already asleep. Sam's going to sleep over at Ben's tomorrow night, said Morley on Thursday. Well, let's have a quiet night, said Dave. Let's get a movie. I'll get some wine. We'll stay home. We'll order dinner. Friday night at 8:15, Morley and Dave are upstairs in the den, snuggled on the couch. I told Stephanie to be home at 11, says Morley. Morley is reading the paper. Dave peers at his wife over the book. He thinks to himself, she looks so beautiful. I am so lucky to be here on this couch with her. Sometimes the world is a perfect place. And that is when he remembers the invitation to the Zuckerman's dinner. For a full, frozen, horrible minute, he doesn't say a thing. It would be better for everyone, he thinks, if Morley doesn't know about this. He considers slipping down to the laundry room where there's a phone he can use without being heard. He could call the Zuckermans and say, what? That one of the kids was sick. No, it was too late for that. That one of the kids was dead. And they couldn't come. Or the babysitter was dead. No, there'd been an accident. He was phoning from the hospital. We are, says Dave, achieving a calmness he did not feel. We're supposed to be at the Zuckerman's eating dinner. Morley doesn't say anything. Morty phoned on Tuesday. He asked us to dinner tonight at 7 o'clock. I didn't know this, says Morley. Ominously, she is speaking even slower than Dave. You didn't tell me this. Dave is now more worried about himself than he is about the Zuckermans. We were supposed to be there at 7, he says, glancing at his watch. It's not on the calendar, Dave. You didn't write it on the calendar. Morley has begun to sound like Hal, a computer in the movie 2001. What are you going to do about it, she asks. Not we. Not what are we going to do about it. The Zuckermans live on Brock Avenue. Their house is less than a 5-minute walk from Dave's house. I'll go over there, he says. And I'll look in the window. Maybe it's like a buffet. Maybe there are lots of people there. Maybe they haven't missed us. That's stupid, Dave. Phone them. What? Phone them. I can't phone them. If it's a buffet, I don't have to phone them. A buffet is like a cocktail party. It doesn't matter when you arrive. It'll be okay. I'll be right back. Dave is pleading. I'll be right back, he says. Don't move. When he gets there, Dave looks at the Zuckerman's house from the far side of the street. The drapes are pulled. Now what, he thinks. But he knows now what. He has to get closer. He makes a tack by the house, and then he says, now or never. Glides over the front lawn like a spy, thinking they won't see me in the dark, as long as I don't make a noise, as long as they don't have a dog. As long as a neighbor doesn't see me and call the police, how would he explain that? If the police arrived and Morty and Irene came outside and they saw him being taken away by the police, how could he explain skulking around on their property when he was supposed to be inside eating? They would think he was crazy. The windows at the far side of the house are over Dave's head, but there's a garbage can by the walk. Dave lugs it over to the window and then, holding onto the windowsill, he pulls himself up as if he was doing a chin-up. His head fills the window like a rising moon. He comes up about a foot away from Morty, who is sitting by the window reading the paper. Irene is on the other side of the room. She is looking straight at Dave. Dave is sure she can see him. Ducks down, expecting a scream. Leaves the garbage can where it is, runs for the street, and doesn't stop running until he's around the block. Surely his father never did things like this. When is he going to grow up? He meets Morley on the street on his way home. "We can't go there," he says. "They're just sitting there. They look like they have already eaten." "You don't have to come," says Morley. "But I'm going." Dave follows his wife down the street. He's a step behind her. "Listen," he says frantically, "I have an idea. Why don't we go tomorrow night instead?" "We show up at 7 o'clock tomorrow. That would cover it. They'll know we had it wrong, but they won't know for sure. There'll be doubt. They'll at least have to wonder if Morty made a mistake." Morley keeps walking. "Or we don't go at all and we never mention it. Pretend it never happened. Listen, we can invite them to our house, like in 3 weeks. Anything, with other people, just to show that we like them." Morley keeps walking. "Or phone them. Let's go home and phone them. You can say I had a heart attack." "For God's sake, Morley, it's too late to go." Morley stops and turns and repeats the only thing that she has said since her husband came back. "You don't have to come if you don't want to, but I'm going." What could he say to that? What else could he do but keep walking, following his wife like a boy on a shopping trip with his mother? Only moments ago, he was totally in love with this woman. Now, as he struggles to keep up, he hears himself silently invoking the Lord to bring down a bolt of lightning and strike her dead at his feet. So he won't have to keep going, won't have to stand on his neighbor's porch beside her, won't have to live through the rest of the night. In fact, he thinks, looking up, if a bolt of lightning did come down, he could phone the Zuckermans from the hospital. And say he was sorry that they didn't make it to dinner, but on the way over, Morley was hit by lightning. He was phoning from the hospital. When they got there, when they're standing on the porch and Morley's hand is moving toward the doorbell, Dave says, "I'm sorry. This is my fault. I'm sorry." "Yes," she says, "this is your fault." And then she rings the bell. "What are you going to say?" asked Dave. "I phoned already," she says. "I phoned while you were gone. I told them we forgot." Irene Zuckerman was smiling when she opened the door. Thank you very much.